I think it will be pretty tough. I think I adjust pretty well. I think my game really translates to the NBA, so I think I'll be fine. I'll just listen to my coach and get ready to learn.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily fantasy basketball podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter as always at @RedRock_Bball. The NBA draft is in the book. So what we turn to now leading up to free agency is looking at the dynasty value of the rookies that were selected, as well as a bunch of guys who went undrafted and have ended up with teams in the frenzy that is the undrafted free agency signing period straight after the draft. So we're going to talk about that over the course of a couple of shows this week and do another draft reaction show as well, and also look at a look of how last year's rookie class meshed with this year's rookie class and where those players would sort of fit in. I'm going to do a top 30 on that as well. Michael Bolton.
Let's get to it indeed.
So in today's show, I'm going to be counting down over this week the top 80 rookies in Dynasty. Now, a lot of these guys aren't going to have impacts in the NBA, but a lot of leagues, 30 team leagues, especially, you're drafting 60 rookies. So just giving you an idea, I've gone out to 80 here, all 60 picks in the NBA draft, plus 20 undrafted free agent guys who have been signed to two-way deals or summer league deals or exhibit 10 deals or fully guaranteed deals in the case of a couple of players who signed after the draft. Today's show, we're going to be going from number 80 down to number 41. So the back end there, 40 players, only talking about a lot of these guys really briefly because they're not going to have too much of an impact, but just ranking these guys, if you've got, and there's plenty of guys who have signed undrafted free agent contracts that I'm not including in this list as well. Anyone that you think that I'm off on or you would have in a different area, hey, please feel free to tweet that at me or leave a comment in the video below. So let's get in and have a look at these guys from number 80 down to number 41. All right, at number 80, I've got Brian Bowen of the Indiana Pacers, undrafted but signed a two-way deal. He played down here in Australia last season, only played 15 minutes a game, coming off the bench, wasn't all that impressive, but did shoot 34% from three, so that's somewhat of a start. Good free throw shooter, solid enough from the field as well, but it's the peripheral numbers which were lacking. Low assists, low steals, low blocks on that two-way deal. He is a guard. 6'7", small forward type of a body, shooting guard, small forward, 2'3", type of a body, 6'7", decently strong and rugged, but it's that shooting ability which is really going to be key as he translates across to the NBA. At 79, Josh Reeves, the Dallas Mavericks signed him to a two-way deal. He's from Penn State, four-year player at Penn State. He's got some really interesting fantasy translation numbers, 6'5" guard, but it's mainly because of his steal numbers. For the last three seasons in college, he averaged over two steals per game, almost three assists per game in each of the last two seasons as well, and shot 36 and 38% in his final two seasons from three. During his time in Penn State, a low usage guy, but that defensive ability, those defensive stats can always be something that we pay attention to, because that can get guys on the court, can get them minutes as a backup, a third string guard, and get them on there, a bit like Big Shaq Harrison.
Big Shaq!
Just a guy that can make their money in the NBA by being able to generate steals. So he is a name to watch for that reason alone, and he's on a two-way with the Dallas Mavericks, Josh Reeves. At number 78, the Houston Rockets, they didn't have a draft pick in this draft at all, but they made some pretty strong undrafted free agent signings. I'm going to talk about a couple of them in today's show. Number one of those is the 7-1 center, Moses Brown, who went to UCLA last season, averaged 10-8 with almost two blocks, 61% shooter, not a three-point shooter, and one of the worst free throw shooters you'll ever see. So it fits in the Houston tradition of Clint Capella and Dwight Howard, 35% free throw shooting from Moses Brown last season. Really just a defensive specialist type of guy, a finisher at the rim, but someone who I thought, when I did my fantasy translations, they came out okay for Moses Brown. They definitely weren't a disaster like other players, but that block rate, that field goal percentage, solid enough rebound numbers for Moses Brown. He is on just signed to the Summer League team at this point, but he is just someone to keep an eye on. Number 77 is Robert Franks. Went to the Charlotte Hornets. He is there on a two-way deal. not really massively into Franks, but just the by him signing a two-way deal gives him at least some ability to have an impact at some point. Averaged almost 22 points a game last season for Washington State, a 6'9 forward, shot 40% from three each of the last two seasons as well, seven boards a game. Defensively, and the defensive stats are a real struggle for Franks. But a guy that can play on the wing there, that can shoot the three ball, it could end up finding some sort of spot in that Charlotte team, which is always looking for players to help out. Another Rockets guy that went undrafted, number 76, Chris Clemons, one of the best scoring players in the history of college basketball. Another 4-year guy, as many of these undrafted players are, played for Campbell. Averaged 30 points per game last season and 25 points in his sophomore and junior season. A pretty high steal rate as well. Shot relatively good, 36, good, that's terrible, 54% from two over his career, 36% from three over his career as well. True shooting of over 61 in each of the last two seasons with a usage, an absolutely astronomical usage of 39 and 36%. So that combination of efficiency and usage is huge. He's never going to have that sort of a role in the NBA, but got to the line a ton, shot the three ball well, and getting shooters and getting scorers in Houston is a priority. So I do really like Chris Clemons there. I just wish they'd sign him to a more of a guaranteed deal rather than a summer league deal. At 75, Max Strus went to the Boston Celtics on a two-way deal. I think the only reason I really have him ahead of Clemons at this point is because he's on a two-way and Clemons is on a non-guaranteed summer league deal. Strus also a little bit younger, 6'6", only a two-year college guy, guard, 20 points per game this season, a steal a game, shot the free throws really, really well, four attempts per game, 84%, threes were fairly solid as well. Not much of a distributor, not much of a defensive player, but some scoring punch as a two-way guy. He should be able to have some relative success in the G League. At number 74, Sagaba Kanate of the West Virginia Mountaineers. He went to the Toronto Raptors on an Exhibit 10 deal. An Exhibit 10 deal is one where they get a little bit of guaranteed money, but it can be easily converted to a full-time contract or a two-way contract. He was injured a lot this season, but a guy whose translations are absolutely through the roof because he rebounded the ball well, he shot the three okay, but mainly he blocked shots, and he blocked shots at a huge rate. Now, being able to do that in the NBA is probably going to be a little bit harder for Kanata. He only played the 8 games last season, but blocked 2.8 shots. In fact, the season before, where he played 36 games and 25 minutes a night, he blocked 3.2 shots. So he has been an outstanding shot blocker at the college level. This season was the first season he started taking threes. Now, only did it across the 8 games, 3 attempts, but hit them at 39%. His free throws were 81%. So I think there's a decent amount of hope that he can be not necessarily a big-time NBA player, only 6'8". Is he going to be too undersized to get these blocks? But the three-point shooting looks interesting. The free throw shooting is a positive, and the shot blocking has been excellent for Kanate. Hard to find the minutes in Toronto originally, but we know how they develop undrafted guys. We know how they use their G League. Fred VanVleet, one of those guys, coming up. We've got guys like Pascal Siakam, late first round picks, Norm Powell, second round picks, Chris Boucher, the G League MVP. Kanate is a guy to watch there. At number 73, Dedrick Lawson went to the Golden State Warriors. He came from Kansas, played 3 seasons in college, the last one, first two in Memphis and the last one in Kansas, averaged 19.5 with over 10 boards. Not a prolific shot blocker, but did shoot the three okay, 39%. I thought he probably was in with a chance of getting drafted, but on the Warriors now the Warriors, we know that they do like to get any sort of random centers in and play these guys and try and develop. And if he can shoot a three ball and be a guy that can come in there and at least be a factor, there's a chance that he can find himself on the roster, or at least on a two-way deal as we move forward. I'm not talking about these guys massively because their fantasy value is, of course, relatively limited at the back end of these rankings. The next guy I talk about is number 72, Daquan Jeffries. Played for Tulsa for the last two seasons in college, averaged 13 points, shooting 37% from three and 61% on twos, which is a huge number for a 6'5" swingman type of a guy. Block numbers pretty solid as well, 1.2 blocks, a steal per game. And a guy that I was, I guess, decently surprised that he wasn't drafted. Fantasy translation numbers come across pretty strong. Orlando getting, again, they're still not getting that scoring punch. He's not a high scorer, just 13 points per game last season. They still need more offensively from their players, really going with that archetype of getting defensive type guys in there, but you know, really efficient. A college number of 63 true shooting over the course of his career is obviously really strong, but couldn't even top a 20% usage mark. So not really a massive offensive threat despite the efficiency that he showed. At number 71, we're looking at the big man, the 6'6", 6'7", the big man out of UCF, Taco Fall, gone to the Celtics on one of those Exhibit 10 contracts. Everyone's always interested to see the really, really big man, and he's going to be a massive attraction at Vegas Summer League playing for the Celtics. He averaged 11.5 last season, but his ability or his value comes in blocking shots. Now, is he going to be able to stay on an NBA court, much like Boban Marjanovic? Probably not. Just way too big, not fast enough, and this guy just doesn't generate any steals, any assists. Like, his numbers through his college career are comical. 0.4 assists, 0.2 steals per game over 115 games. Never was able to push into the high 20s in terms of minutes played as well. But a situational Salah Mejri, but bigger and worse option as a shot blocker. Well, there is some value there for Taco Fall if he does end up finding himself on the main roster for the Boston Celtics. At number 70, I'm probably not going to have many other options to play this soundbite, so here we go.
Miss Vanjie.
Yes, Miss Vanjie. Vanja Marinkovic of the Sacramento Kings. He was the 60th pick in the draft, and from all reports, it does appear that he does want to come over this season for the Kings. Whether he does that or not still remains to be seen. He's 22 years of age. He's Serbian. He's 6'6". He's a guard. I don't really see this guy as a long-term NBA player. He played 27 minutes a night last season for Partizan over in Serbia. 12 points per game, 35% three-point shooter, limited steal, assist, and rebound rate. Basically, just a guy that comes in as a shooter, but even then, not a real knockdown, lights-out type of a shooter. Vanja I put there mainly just because he was that second round pick and has a chance of at least being on a roster, but I'm not massively into him. At number 69.
Giggity.
And mainly because he's got a really cool name, but I actually like him as a player as well. Zylan Cheatham of Arizona State ended up with the Pelicans on a two-way deal. There's quite a bit of interest there in him. 6'8 forward, 3 years in college, two with San Diego State, then transferred to Arizona State. 12 points with 10 boards. Another one of these undersized power forward center type guys. Low block rate, low steal rate, can pass the ball a little bit, which is interesting as that power forward 4-5 combo type of a player. His three-point shooting is really weird. 18 and 17% his first two seasons, 44% this season, but over the course of his college career, he only took 54 threes, so it's really hard to get a full read on that. But his value is going to be from being a strong rebounder and being a guy who, as a big man, can generate some assists. So Zylan Cheatham over with the Pelicans is at least a name there on that two-way deal. Poor free throw shooting as well is somewhat of a concern for Cheatham. At number 68, a guy that was drafted in the draft, and that's Jalen Hands, who went to the Brooklyn Nets, a two-year player in college, ends up with Brooklyn, played in UCLA, averaged 14 points with 6 assists this season. He's a 6'3" point guard, 1.3 steals, yeah, pretty solid number, shot 37% from 3 both of his seasons as well. Defensively, there are some issues with Hands. But he is a guy that at least finds himself in this role with Brooklyn. They might lose D'Angelo Russell. Who knows if Kyrie comes? They're always looking to bring guys in. They have success with developing undrafted and lower drafted type players as well. I'm just not massively into Hands. I'm not really confident that he's an NBA caliber player. The same goes for number 67, Kyle Guy, who went to Sacramento. Let's just call him Guy. He played for Virginia last season. Again, I didn't have this guy drafted when I did my mock drafts. 3 years for Virginia, averaged 15 points with 2 assists per game, shot 43% from 3. That's the strength. 43% over his career and in his junior season, 7.4 attempts per game. from deep. So that's something that at least gives him a skerrick of value. I honestly don't see this guy as an NBA player long-term, and I think maybe he gets 1 year maximum in the NBA. At number 66, Mariel Shayok of the Philadelphia 76ers. Yeah, not again. So many of those late second round picks I just was not a fan of. 4 year college player, transferred to Iowa State last season and had his best season by far. 33 minutes, almost 19 points, 39% from three, five boards, two assists, free throws, really, really strong, 88% as well, got to the line at a decent amount, but not a guy that I anticipated getting drafted. But getting that sort of shooting for Philadelphia is interesting. But he's old. He's a 6'6 guard, so he's got some size. But again, a four or five-year college player, or 5 year because there was the transfer sit-out year as well. His development's not something I'm all that interested in, really. He's just going to be a scorer type of guy. And when you come in at this level of the NBA, if that's all you're offering, then your overall value does get pretty limited. At number 65, Dewan Hernandez went to the Toronto Raptors. He came out of the Miami Hurricanes program. A center, and I talked about the Raptors being able to develop these sort of centers. 6'11 is Hernandez, 2 years in Miami, averaged 11-7 this year with one block per game. He does very, very little to excite me as a player, and I don't think he's really an NBA caliber player. I would much rather see a guy like Kanate, who I mentioned earlier, get those opportunities, even though the size difference is pretty stark. At number 64, Jalen Noel, drafted by the Minnesota Timberwolves in that second round. Again, not a pick that I was massively keen on. A 2 year college player with Washington, averaged 16 points per game both seasons, three assists, five rebounds, shot the three ball well, 44% last season as well. A solid free throw shooter. They are all positive traits for players to be able to hit those numbers, be able to hit those shots at such strong numbers. And that's probably what got Noel drafted in the end. Defensively, he's okay without being a standout. But again, there are just so many players in this overall draft class that I just don't think they're going to be long-term NBA players. And that's going to be reflected when you go through and see. And some of my ranks in this, it's one of the most unsure drafts I've been about in terms of where guys sit, because I'm just so underwhelmed by so many players, especially some of those guys in the second round. And even in the first round, I like a lot of undrafted guys more than even some of the players that went in the first round, at the back end of the first round. And value to me is all over the place in this overall NBA draft. So dynasty rookie drafts, are going to be pretty interesting. At number 63, the Spurs selected Quinn, or they didn't select him at 63. I've got him at 63 on my dynasty rookie ranks. Quinderi Weatherspoon went to the San Antonio Spurs. I wasn't a massive fan of the Spurs draft in general. Weatherspoon, a 4 year player in college. Not a guy that I sort of had him on the border of being drafted. A decent enough steal rate, really strong efficiency numbers from him as well through his career. But where's he going to fit in on this San Antonio Spurs team? Will he ever be able to be a starting caliber player? Probably not. Rotation guy, maybe. They do need wing type guys, and he can fit in that area. But again, he just doesn't do anything that really stands out as being special, does Quinderi Weatherspoon. So that's why I've got him sitting there, 6'4 guard, probably a little bit undersized as well to play up to the three, which is really where the Spurs need guys. More of an offensive only type of a player. True shooting of 62% this last season, which is okay, but definitely not anything that gets us massively, massively interested. At number 62, we're looking at a two-way guy, and that is Dean Wade, who went to the Cleveland Cavaliers. So Wade went to the Cavs on a two-way deal. A four-year player from Kansas State, Dean Wade, averaged only 13 points per game in 30 minutes last season, but did shoot over 40% from three in each of his last three college seasons, and did that without being a very strong three-point shooter. So that's interesting to see Wade be able to do that. I don't think he's really a massive option, you know, long-term to ever become a starter or anything along those lines. More of a defensive type of a guy whose, you know, steal numbers aren't fantastic. He did have one really strong steal season in college. That was his junior season. But outside of that, yeah, not a guy that we look at as a huge, really big upside type of a player. At number 61, we're looking at Naz Reid from LSU. He ended up in Minnesota on the Timberwolves on a two-way deal. a little bit surprised that Reed didn't get picked at the end of the second round. But again, when we're looking from like 36, 37, maybe even 40 onwards in the second round, you can count these undrafted guys very, very similarly to those second round guys, because a lot of times players who have the talent to be selected in that second round, they'll make it known through their agents, like, don't pick us. We want to choose our own situation. We want to be able to come as, you know, undrafted guys or however they want to do it, rather than get picked by a team. And a lot of teams will acquiesce to that request from agents. So Reed is a 6'10 big man. From LSU, was a freshman, so pretty young. 14-7 he averaged. Defensive numbers are pretty lacking. Shot the three okay. Assist and steal numbers pretty low for Reed. Again, I was pretty surprised that he didn't get drafted, but the fantasy translations from Naz Reed aren't that good. But I do think that he can be at least get himself onto a 15-man roster, and we'll see how that goes for him. And the Timberwolves at least look a little bit more committed to using their two-way spots this season, when that really hasn't been the case for them at all over the Tom Thibodeau era before we got to this new Ryan Saunders and Gersan Rosas situation. The next bunch of guys at number 60, Cody Martin, who was picked, I thought, way too early by the Charlotte Hornets out of Nevada. Cody went to the Hornets in the 30s in this draft. A four-year player, averaged 12 points last season. Now, the five assists and 1.4 steals are fairly interesting, and shot 36% from three. But over the course of his college career, the three-point shooting's been all over the place. But one steady thing was the assist numbers in his two seasons at Nevada. He was able to put up decent enough assist numbers there, but outside of that, he's not doing huge amounts. Really low volume, low usage guy, but they run, you know, situations where guys like Nick Batum on the wing have been able to fill that role. He's not saying he's Nick Batum, and maybe when I look at it, number 60 is a little bit low for Cody Martin, just because those assist numbers, if anything develops where he finds a rotation role, assists can always be really useful in fantasy, but I don't really believe in him as a long-term NBA player. Next, we're looking at another Hornets guy who was drafted in that second round, and that's Jalen McDaniels, went to the Charlotte Hornets there. He was a two-year player from San Diego State, averaged 16 points with 8 boards and a steal last season. The three-point shooting improved into his second season, but not enough to really get you too excited. But one of the main reasons I'm down on McDaniels is some of the off-court stuff, some disturbing sexual-type charges against him. I don't know there was any sexual assault stuff, but it was like filming people without their consent and distributing that, which is not a great thing to be doing. Of course, that can just be something that hopefully people can mature from and understand how wrong it is and be better people. But he has some off-court issues, McDaniels. Again, I just don't have much faith in his development, but not a complete write-off, of course. Justin James, a guy that I just did not expect to be drafted by the Sacramento Kings. Didn't expect him to be drafted at all. But here we are. He was drafted a pretty good scorer. He played 4 years at Wyoming. 22 points per game with 9 boards and 4.5 assists with 1.5 steals. That's really, really, really strong numbers. There's a 6'7", 2'3" wing type of a player. But of course, he's an older player. He's 4 years in college. That scoring really boosted up in his senior season. He was 19 as a junior, 16 as a sophomore as well, but only started his last two seasons in college. Not that high pedigree guy. The advanced stuff doesn't really love him. True shooting of only 51% is troublesome. The usage is really, really high. I just don't see it for Justin James being an NBA caliber player. And I'm going to say that for so many different guys throughout this process, because there's just so many guys that I'm not a massive fan of. Let's talk about another guy who's a two-way player. Charlie Brown went to the Atlanta Hawks on a two-way. He played 2 years for St. Joe's, did have a missed the entirety of the 17-18 season, averaged 19 points last season with 6 boards, shot 36% from three, and that was 38% in his freshman season as well. Defensively, it did really struggle. Efficiency was okay, but not great. More of a three-point shooting. A 6'7" wing who has some defensive issues. Got to fit in behind Cam Reddish, behind the other guy, DeAndre Hunter. Couldn't remember his name there for a bit. But defensively, really, really struggles. And I'm not sure he's a good enough offensive player for that to be offset. At number 56, we're looking at the guard from Tennessee, Jordan Bone, the Boner. He ended up with Detroit 3 years for Tennessee, 13.5 points with 6 assists. That 6 assists immediately should get your attention, and an absolutely fantastic athlete. Now, whether he can actually be an NBA player at this point in Detroit remains to be seen. Defensively, he is a real struggle to be a solid enough defensive player. The shooting efficiency, 56 true shooting last season, was pretty strong, but it's all about that assist percentage for Bone and whether that can come across. We know that Reggie Jackson and Ish Smith, they're not going to necessarily be around with the Pistons long term. So there is a potential opportunity for a guard like Bone to find himself at least in that third string point guard role as early as this season. And there is a little bit of upside there with him with those with that athleticism and those assist numbers. Someone to at least pay a level of attention to as we move forward. The next guy I want to talk about is the Clippers, and that was their selection of Terrence Mann. He is my 55th ranked player in my Dynasty rookie ranks. Mann, a guard who I guess I was a little bit surprised to see him go at that point in the draft coming out of college. Played 4 years for Florida State, 11 points per game last season, 6'7" guard. Didn't shoot the three ball all that well until his senior season, which is a little bit of a red flag, and wasn't a good free throw shooter then as well. But that improvement, say his junior season, 25% from three and 66% from the line. Senior season, 39 from three, 79 from the line. So that's not just him becoming better because he's older. It's obviously a real area that he's worked on. He took his game a little bit more out to the perimeter as well, took more three-point shots. Defensively, there were some struggles in terms of defensive numbers and being able to generate those. But he's far from a complete write-off on that end. And just another option that they're going to have there to be able to put up, decent enough type numbers is Terrence Mann for the Clippers, but not someone who I expect to really have massive long-term value. The next guy is a two-way player, but someone who I think could fit really well with the Los Angeles Lakers, and that's at number 54, Zach Norvell. He's on that two-way deal. We know the Lakers, they haven't filled out their roster at all at this point. That's all to come. A guy that was a good free throw shooter in college, a good three-point volume guy for Gonzaga, also averaged 15 points per game, 7 threes a game he attempted, hit 37% of them, so that's 2.6 makes, 3 assists. There are a few things there to get interested about for Norvell. 6'5" wing player, not going to be confused for some great passer. Defensively, he's okay without being great, but I think he can find himself not really in a Josh Hart type of role, but at least a guy who could, and I do see him working his way into playing time this season. Whether that's 20 games or 30 games, I don't know. But a guy that I can see sticking around in the league for a couple more seasons, and that's why I've got him higher than some of those other guys that are that were drafted, say, ahead of him. So that's not the direction that we're... it's not just all about draft order, is what I'm trying to say. The next guy we take a look at here is number 53 on my list. That's, I don't even know how to say this one correctly, Mia One of the Utah Jazz, a 6'6 guard out of Yale, averaged 17 points last season with 6 boards and 3.5 assists, blocked 1.3 shots, shot 37% from three, and he's a really strong free throw shooter as well. Some solid enough numbers for One coming out of Yale. Some of the advanced stuff like the PIPM is not fantastic for him, but as we detailed with the Utah Jazz a while ago, is that their roster is, there's some room in the back end there. A guy that translated fairly well fantasy-wise, assists, rebounds, blocks, good free throw percentage, decent scoring, decent three-point volume. There's an opportunity there with Kyle Korver going out in Utah. Of course, there's Donovan Mitchell, there's Mike Conley, there's Royce O'Neal, who are taking a lot of those minutes there in the backcourt. Grayson Allen's gone as well. So One is a guy that can come in and at least work his way, whether it's into a two-way deal, but someone with a decent amount of fantasy upside at least. At number 52, another opportunity to play this soundbite.
Bort? Oh, come on, Bort?
Mommy, buy me a license plate!
No, come along, Bort.
Are you talking to me?
No, my son is also named Bort.
Yes, Lugrenz Dort from Arizona State. He signed a two-way with the Thunder, averaged 16 points per game last season. It's the three-point shooting that's a real concern for Dort. I know many people, like Sam Vecenie, had him at like number 30, I believe, on his board. Other people were just way off Dort and didn't think he was draftable. In the end, he wasn't draftable because he didn't get drafted, but signed immediately to a two-way deal with the Oklahoma City Thunder, but just finding himself as another guy with this Thunder team that can't shoot. He's from Canada. Not that that means much for his overall value. A guy that can generate steals, which is interesting in that respect. But outside of that, you know, fantasy game, not particularly good. But I could see him at least carving out some sort of a role, well, like Deontay Burton was able to do last season at points for the Thunder. At number 51, we're going back to the Utah Jazz, who picked a couple of interesting guys in this middle to back end of the first round. Justin Wright Foreman, a 6'2 guard from Hofstra, averaged 27 points per game as a senior, 24 as a junior, shot the ball really well, 43% from three, elite free throw shooter as well, generated some assist numbers, so not a complete black hole on that end, but someone who was able to be a really strong scorer. Now, defensively, his numbers look atrocious on the defensive end. Your PIPM, defensive box score plus minus, just massive, massive negatives, numbers which you don't really see. But offensively, the usage combined with true shooting is impressive, and hitting into a Jazz system where at least there's guys there that can help make up the difference or the issues that you have defensively. Wright Foreman's a guy that can come in and at least provide some sort of scoring punch, but he does need to get significantly better in terms of his defense. And I'm not really confident that he's going to be able to get to that level. A player that I was a little bit confused as to them not getting drafted, that's Shamori Ponds. A lot of that could be due to those factors of agents, you know, discouraging teams from picking him. The Rockets swooped on him immediately. Now, he's not signed to a two-way. He's not signed to a guaranteed deal. He's on a summer league contract at this point. But Shamori Ponds, coming out of St. John's, played 3 years for St. John's, averaged 20 points per game each of the last two seasons, 5 assists, and really big steal numbers, over 2 steals per game in all 3 of his college seasons, which makes him a guy with tremendous fantasy upside. Assists and steals with high free throw percentage, decent 3-point volume, okay as a scorer. There's a bit to like there. Now, of course, with the Rockets, we know that there's James Harden and Chris Paul running the show. But after that, Eric Gordon, how long is he going to be around? Same with Chris Paul. It's going to be hard to trade, but who knows? And what other young guard prospects do they have coming through? The answer there is nobody. So Pons has an opportunity to stick on this team, to find himself on a guaranteed contract or a non-guarantee, a 2-year deal, whatever it is, at the back end of this roster and be a guy they look to develop. So I'm pretty interested in him. And again, as I said, an undrafted guy who I've got significantly higher than many of the guys who were picked in the second round of this draft. A player who was picked in the second round of this draft by the Washington Wizards after the Sixers sold this pick to them is Admiral Schofield from Tennessee. I think this is the third Tennessee guy I've spoken about already. Schofield, a guy that obviously loved as a teammate, 4-year college player, averaged 16.5 with six rebounds this season, and shot 40% from three, or basically 40% from three, each of his last 3 seasons in college. So that gives you some level of hope. I'm not sure what he can do on the court to keep him on the court. Defensively, the stats are low, not a ball mover, a poor free throw shooter. So how much of that 3-point shooting is actually going to translate to the NBA, especially considering his free throw percentage got worse every season in college, from 90 to 78 to 76 down to 70%. And that's a worrying trend, and the steals and blocks have never been there for Admiral Schofield. At number 48, another Jazz guy. I think a lot of the value I'm giving to these Jazz players is because they do like to get these guys in. George Niang, an example last season. Joe Ingles, undrafted guy. Obviously came from Australia and then from Europe. But they can get these options. And with how weak this bench looks at the moment, or their depth is, there's opportunities here. And Jarrell Brantley, who played 4 seasons at the College of Charleston, averaged 19 points last season with 8 boards and a block and 1.4 steals. And outside of last season, had been a pretty strong 3-point shooter. There is an opportunity for Brantley to come in and at least be able to compete. A 6'7 forward, probably more of a 4 than a 3, but 3-point shooting volume, he can at least put up some threes and hit them at a decent enough rate. I think Jarrell Brantley is an interesting guy as an undrafted player. At number 47, a second round guy. At number 47, Ignas Brazdeikis went to the New York Knicks. He went in the second round as well. I saw an interesting headline of an article written about him today calling him a stud, which I'm not really sure you want to go stud for the 46th pick or whatever it was. 15 points per game at Michigan last season, comically low steal, block, and assist numbers, but shot the 3 ball well, shot the free throws well. And we know that this Knicks roster, there are plenty of open spots or abilities for people to jump in. The problem is he plays a similar position to both RJ Barrett and the Fort Kevin Knox as a 6'7 forward. You know, finding those roles and finding those minutes might be tough, but there's really no one else on this team that's challenging him. Lance Thomas isn't going to be there. Mario Hezonja is not going to be there. So Brazdeikis, I imagine, is on the roster this season and, you know, fills in occasionally depending on what happens with free agency. But there's enough to like about him that we can at least find that it's not a complete disaster of a second round pick, which I think some of the picks weren't all that great. At number 46 on my dynasty rookie ranks, Alen Smilagic of the Golden State Warriors, a Serbian 6'10" power forward center that played for the G League Santa Cruz Warriors last season. Every man and their dog knew that the Warriors were going to be looking at Smilagic, so the Pelicans took him and then sold that pick off to the Warriors. A little bit of work from David Griffin there, just dicking over another team, which is always fun to do. Now, Smilagic has some really interesting skills. I don't know whether he can ever be an on-court NBA rotation player, but the Warriors do like weird centers. He can shoot the ball. He shows an ability to at least be able to stretch out and to begin to shoot it. 18 PER in the G League last season, 56 true shooting, only shot 24% from three, but I think that can improve. 4 boards a game, a block per game in his 17 minutes. Take that to 30 minutes, you're talking about 7 rebounds, 1.7 blocks, 14-15 points per game in the G League. I think there's enough to like there with Smilagic to think that he will be on the roster next season. They obviously really, really like him. And here he is, jumping up there at number 46 on my list. At number 45, KZ or KZ Okpala. KZ if you come from Australia. A lot of people thought that he would be a first-round pick. I had him sort of on the fringes there. Went to the Miami Heat in the end, in the second round. Okpala, 2 years at Stanford, averaged 17 points last season. 37% shooting from three, a big step up from his freshman year as well. Low steal and block numbers, as, again, so many guys in this class, that's the real problem that holds their fantasy value back. I don't see Okpala ever developing into a second-year guy, but the Heat have got the benefit of the doubt. Tyler Johnson, Hassan Whiteside, Joshy Richardson, even they turned Derek Jones Jr. from a scrap heap guy into a valuable rotation player. So that's why Okpala at least has some level of... Because honestly, if he wasn't in Miami, I would have had him behind, you know, a lot of these other guys, Brazdeikis, Smilagic, Pons, all these other, I would have had him, behind those guys. And the same thing goes for the guy that I've got at number 44. That's Keldon Johnson of the San Antonio Spurs. Literally the worst player that I translated. Actually, that's not true. Out of the guys that ended up on teams, Tyus Battle, who went to the Timberwolves on a two-way, and Simisola Shitu, the best name in the draft. I believe he went to the Grizzlies on a deal as well. They're the only two guys who translated worse than Keldon Johnson out of the 120 guys that I did. No steal numbers, no assist numbers, no block numbers, poor shooting from the field, poor shooting from the line, low offensive volume as well. Now, the Spurs do need wing players, and Kentucky players do get a marginal benefit of the doubt. So he's getting the double benefit of the doubt. The Spurs benefit of the doubt, and the Kentucky benefit of the doubt, but only averaged 13 points per game last season. Shot 38% from three, not a very high volume, but at least that helps him there. 6'6 wing, they need wing players, they don't need guards. You're finding there if Rudy Gay goes, can DeMar DeRozan hold up? But a guy touted as a 3-and-D wing who provides absolutely no defense is always a problem, and you know, the shooting was not all that high volume. So again, this is a little bit of a benefit of the doubt spot for me. At number 43, Jordan Poole from Michigan. He was drafted at the end of the first round by the Warriors. Not really a selection I was expecting, but Poole is that guy that can come in and bang in three. 6'5" guard out of Michigan, 2 years for Michigan, 37% from three both seasons, attempted over 5 threes per game last year, does very little else apart from shoot those threes. But there's going to be an opportunity for Poole with this Warriors team, with Klay Thompson out for the majority of the season. We don't know Sean Livingston's future. Will Quinn Cook be back? Curry's going to be carrying a load. Now, I don't imagine that Poole's going to be able to come in there and play this huge role immediately and be this 20-minute-a-game guy who bangs in 2 threes a game. But remember, a guy like Landry Shamet, drafted in a very similar situation on a good team, the Sixers and the Clippers, not as good as the Warriors, but this iteration of the Warriors might be a level of the Sixers or a level of the Clippers. And could Poole come in and be that specialist and hit 1.6, 1.7 threes feeding off Curry? I think there's a distinct possibility he could have some of that value. Now, long term, I don't really see it. Much like Shamet, I don't see what the other numbers are that he brings, but at least he's going to have an opportunity to be able to produce immediately. Another Warriors player is the guy we look at next. That's Eric Pascal is it Pascal or Pascal? I don't know which one. I don't know how best to pronounce that. The, a forward from Villanova, 6'8 forward, 4 years in college, averaged 16.5 and 6 last season. Pretty solid free throw shooter, average enough three-pointers, 35% on his threes. And I could definitely see Pascal being able to come in and be a rotation guy almost immediately for the Warriors. Not someone they're going to be falling all over themselves to get into that rotation. But fantasy-wise, the translation's not there. The defensive numbers are poor. He's not a passer. He's not a high-volume scorer. He's a low-usage player with poor efficiency. That is obviously a troubling combination. But I think that just because I think he can be a rotation guy and someone who can come in and play almost immediately, there is some value in a guy like Eric Pascal. The last guy I'm going to talk about today is the 41st ranked player on my dynasty list, and that's Isaiah Roby, who went to the Dallas Mavericks, big man from Nebraska, really all about the defense with Roby. 3 seasons in Nebraska, 12-7 with 1.9 blocks and 1.3 steals. Interestingly, his two-point percentage has been all over in the course of his career. 45% as a freshman, 62% as a sophomore, and then down to 49.6% as a junior. So hard to get a full grasp on that. Not a high-volume three-point shooter, but has shown over the last 2 seasons that he can knock it down. He 45 of 126 over the last 2 seasons from three, which is a decent enough number for a 6'8" forward, who's probably more of an undersized center, like against so many players in this draft. But it's the defensive numbers that Roby was able to put up, which give him a level of fantasy intrigue. We know, again, the Dallas Mavericks are a great team at developing guys, Maxi Kleber, Dwight Powell, these undrafted or later round type players, and the steal, block, rebound with a bit of 3-point volume thrown in for Isaiah Roby gives us an element of upside there that we should be getting marginally interested in. That'll do it for the guys ranked 80 to 41 on my Dynasty Rookie Ranks. Tomorrow, I'll be back looking at 40 through to 21, and then we'll go from 20 through to 1 after that as we look at these players. Going to have another draft review show coming as well during the week. Make sure you're following me on Twitter at @RedRock_Bieber and follow the network at LockedOnNBAnet on both Twitter and on Instagram. Leave a review, 5 stars, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and on YouTube. Give me a thumbs up, leave a comment, hit the bell for notifications, tell your friends, share it, all that stuff. Good luck if you are having a dynasty draft already. It can be pretty tough before Summer League, but good luck for that. And after Summer League, I will go and redo some of these things as well as we see how some of these players fit. But guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Keldon Johnson.